Think we're ready to go. Good evening. This is the Needham Board of Zoning Appeals, and eventually we have two matters to hear and one to deal with a withdrawal. But if we may, the first order of business are the minutes. They were distributed, and Daphne and I noticed that the time was wrong. It should have been 7:30 for the start of the meeting, but with that correction, if there are no other corrections, entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes with the correction of the start time to 7:30.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. So, case number one, continued from May 18th, 2016. Public notice is hereby given that Matthew Stutz owners made application to the Board of Appeals for a special permit amendment under section 7.5.2, 1.4.6, 4.2.1, 1.4.7.2, and any other applicable sections of the bylaw to permit the construction of a second-story addition above the existing east end of the house using existing exterior walls for structural support with no increase in the existing nonconformity at the southeast corner. The property is located at 83 Rolling Lane, Needham, Mass., in the single residence A district. My understanding is, as a result of the new zoning changes, this homeowner actually benefited, and what was nonconforming became conforming because we are no longer measuring the overhang. We're measuring to the foundation, and so they are now able to get a building permit of right to do what they want. And so they've submitted a letter seeking that they be allowed to withdraw, and I presume there should be a withdrawal without prejudice. If someone would make that motion.
I'd make that motion.
And second?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. So public notice is hereby given that Mansfield Cleaning Solutions, DBA Cloudberry Cleaners tenant, has made application to the Board of Appeals for a special permit transfer under section 3.2.2 and any other applicable sections of the zoning bylaw for a dry cleaning establishment. The subject property is located at 1189 Highland Avenue, Needham, Mass., in the business district. And who is here on that matter? Actually, why don't you go over here? We ask you to use the microphone, not because we can't hear you, but because we're televised. Welcome. Want to just introduce yourself?
Yep. My name is Anthony Piangioni, the COO of the company.
And what is the company?
Mansfield Cleaning Solutions.
Okay. And tell us what this is all about.
We are doing business. We're doing business at Lapel's, and we're changing the name to Cloudberry. So the existing business will continue to do the same business. The only amendments I was looking at was we changed our hours of operation. I'd like to hand these out if you need an addendum.
So what are the proposed hours?
Proposal is to be Monday through Friday, 7 to 7. Prior was 7 to 9. Mm-hmm. And Saturdays, 8 to 4, and not open on Sundays.
Well,
thank you.
Okay. I mean, you know, the whatever we have in there is just the outer limit of what you can do.
Okay.
You know, and you don't have to operate all of those hours.
Okay.
So I'm not sure it's really to your advantage to reduce the hours.
Okay.
They're allowed unless you have some reason.
No, there was just any change to the actual plan. That's what. And again, the last one was seven employees working there versus five on a regular basis.
Okay. Where are they going to park?
Most of them take the T. They take the tea in from different places. They don't park there.
Yeah, because, I mean, the parking is
we have eight
tight.
Spots available to us.
Right.
Okay, and there's two of us that have cars.
Okay, so can we put some kind of restriction on how many employees
sure.
can park there?
Sure.
Like maybe three?
Sure.
It says you have eight spaces.
You have eight spaces, correct.
Would it be reasonable to limit the number of employees parking
That's
there?
That's fine, yes.
OK. Okay. All right. The one problem I had, and I think I asked Daphne to communicate to you, is that if you're looking for a transfer, we need something from the current holder of the permit.
This shows.
That would authorize that.
This is our asset purchase agreement when we purchased the company.
Yeah.
And it goes through all the assets that we purchased.
Right.
And on 17B, or 17 of 19, they don't show the price, but it shows purchase. I'm going to just say, is all the computers, vehicles, licenses, and goodwill. I've submitted this to the chair to look at. And that shows all the, everything that we purchased in, for the company.
Did you acquire more than one location?
We required four.
Four locations.
That's correct.
Did you close already?
Oh, yes. Back in April of 15.
What happens if we found that we didn't think the transfer would be a good thing? Just ask him.
Take it from there.
I point out that for some reason, this permit doesn't contain our usual language of saying it's non-transferable.
You probably didn't want to put it in.
No, I don't know. This was when we were doing the 40Bs, and I think maybe it just got overlooked. And I
Maybe not.
We've had a back and forth about that. Yeah. So I think.
So the business was sold, closed. No perk still on site? You don't use perk?
No, not at all.
Can I ask you a couple of questions so that the applicant is Mansfield Cleaning Solutions?
Correct.
Cloudberry Cleaners. That's a DBA Cloudberry Cleaners?
Today, it was DBA Lapels. Now it's DBA Cloudberry.
And so what you acquired was the goodwill, including the name of the existing applicant, Lapels Dry Cleaning?
Correct. And all the licenses and all the...
The applicant is also on the material submitted by Cornerstone Land Consultants on behalf of our client, Carbis 4 LLC. So what's the relationship between Carbis 4?
That's who we purchased from.
Carbis was the seller.
That's old stuff?
I'm sorry. Yes.
So this is being that the applicant, whose name you want the decision, is Mansfield Cleaning
Solutions. Correct. Okay.
In reality, this is a transfer of special permit.
Correct.
I think that's how we should probably treat it.
Carbis L3 LLC was one of the sellers, and the purchaser was Mansfield Holding Group, or its nominee. I take it its nominee is Mansfield Cleaning.
And the applicant in 2013 was Carbis 4 LLC, DBA Lapels Dry Cleaning.
Correct.
So this is a transfer of the special permit. And I guess the only change that we're talking about is increasing the number of employees and restricting the number of parking employees who park on
yeah,
site.
Yeah, I think if we let them have seven employees, we ought to restrict.
Well, you said three, so there's a total of eight, and so three for employees only.
Correct.
And the rest will be for the...
And if they drive, they'll have to find some other place to park.
I have no problem with that.
Okay, and then, first, before we proceed, we ought to find out if there's anyone here from the public who wants to be heard or comment on this. Hearing and seeing none, then...
Did Planning Board have any comments?
Planning Board had no comment. And I think the only other question is whether we want to put in the this is not transferable without consent of the board.
I
generally have thought on restaurants and dry cleaners, it's kind of other uses that I kind of think.
Okay, we know the line then. All right, then. Yeah. I think that's a fair.
Right. Any, Peter, Kathy?
Nope.
No? All right, someone make a motion, please.
Sure. I'll move that the applicant's request for special permit amendment under section 752, 146, 421, and 1472 to permit the, start from the beginning. This is number two, that the applicant's request being Mansfield Cleaning Solutions DBA Cloudberry Cleaners application for special permit to transfer under sections 3.22 the dry cleaning license for the property located at 1189 Highland Avenue, that the additional restrictions would be that of the eight available parking spaces, that three of them, only three of them, may be used by employees, and that other employees will park off-site. And that, in addition, the condition will be that there'll be no transfer of the special permit unless there's an appearance in front of the zoning board and relief for transfers granted.
And I guess we're going to amend the permit to allow 7 employees instead of 5.
Correct.
All right, second?
What's the motion? No, kidding. I'll second the motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Case number 3. Public notice is hereby given that Manorama Shaw owner has made application to the Board of Appeals for a special permit under section 1.4.7.4, 3.2, and 7.5.2, and any other applicable sections of the bylaw to permit the demolition, extension, alteration, enlargement, and reconstruction of the non-conforming two-family dwelling. The property is located at 102 Reservoir Street, Needham, Mass., in the single residence B district. On the hearing, welcome, Mr. Junta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, members of the board. My name is George Junta Jr., appearing on behalf of the applicant. And with me this evening, Manorama is not here, but her husband, PK, is here this evening to assist in this presentation. Okay, so as indicated, this is an application with respect to the property at 102 Reservoir Street. This is property up the street from the Pinellas Market. If any board members haven't actually been out to the site, it's up in sort of an older part of town, up in the Heights. It's a lot it's kind of funny that it's numbered 102 Reservoir, because as you can see from the plan, and if you've been out there, it actually has frontage on Ledge Street and Bridge Street. For the legal frontage, it only has 10 feet of frontage on Reservoir, if you could even say that. So it's kind of an odd numbering. But it's at the intersection at the corner, really, of Bridge, Reservoir, and Ledge. The lot contains 10,641 square feet with 103 feet of frontage on Bridge Street and 95 feet of frontage on Ledge Street. The lot was created quite some time ago, so we have a conforming lot, so we don't have any issues with the lot. But the lot is currently occupied by a 2.5-story pre-existing non-conforming two-family structure. And that two-family is actually non-conforming with respect to the front yard setback on Bridge Street. The setback, of course, is supposed to be 20 feet, but it's actually only 15.3 feet. The house was built, or appears to be built, in or around 1900, around the turn of the century. It's built on a stone foundation. It's kind of a hodgepodge building, not in the best condition. There's about almost 2,100 square feet of living space, with about 1,500 square feet in the lower level, 1,200 of which is finished, 5 bedrooms, 2 baths. So the as I'm going to get into in a minute, the Shaws purchased the property in 2003. They bought it as a two-family. They rented it out over the years and to a number of different tenants. The most recently, they've had some issues with the tenants, and they've decided to knock down the building and rebuild it as a nice new two-family. So hopefully to get a better quality of tenant, or possibly sell the units, and then go forward from there. The current structure, as I said, was built sometime around 1900, but being in the Heights part of town is a quirk, as some board members will remember. This is the part of town that allowed two family up by right up until 1958. And at the annual town meeting in 1958, that was stopped, and thereafter it was single family. So in looking at the records, that's the key year. I start with the assessors, and hope you have the packets. In there, you have the copy of the old assessor's card. On the front page, and I actually have some larger copies here in case it's too difficult to read. If anybody needs them there.
Is this the one that says estimated 1900?
Yeah.
George,
It's Exhibit A.
1900? What's 1900? What? I'm just... Yeah.
Age estimated 1900.
Right.
It's 1900.
Right. Yeah. And actually, a little bit above and to the right of that, you see it where it says apartment, and then there's 2F, two family. All right, indicating on the front of the card that it was assessed as a two family. And then you actually go to the next page, and down towards the bottom, it's kind of hard, it's actually even harder to read on this copy, but where it says house and barn, there's actually the reason you that there's that unreadable part there, it actually says two fam. Somebody, they wrote that over the pre-printed text on the card. And I called that out in the memo. And that might be easier to see on the larger copies here. Again, if any of the board members want to see that. So the old assessor's...
I'm sorry, is that's on the assessor's card that's Exhibit A?
That's right, yep.
Okay, I see there's a second page.
It's the back page of Exhibit A, George.
Okay, got it.
All right, so that's the old assessor's card. Those were created round about 1942 or thereabouts. Then Exhibit B, we have the current assessor's card, shows that it's currently taxed and assessed as a two-family. So for the period in question from 1958 forward, it looks like it's been taxed and assessed and treated by the town as a two-family. Then we go to the records of the building department. Now, unfortunately, there's even less information on this property than there's been on the last few that I've brought before the board. In particular, you can see from the field card, if you scan through that, none of the permits on there really give any indication as to use whatsoever. They're just very bland. And looking at a lot of the permits, they don't really provide much information. But there was one permit, an electrical permit from March of 1998, which I provided as Exhibit D, which was a permit to install two separate electrical meters, implying the two-family use and the recognition of such by the building department. So because we don't have a lot of documentary evidence, I went to our next best sort of source of evidence, which we all loathe now, the poll tax records and street let records. I started at 1951. I figured I'd go back several years before the change date and then bring it forward. And you can see from the compilation that basically there are several years, admittedly, where there are gaps. But most of the years, it shows two families living at the property, and particularly 51 through 57. Then in 60, 65 through 76, 77, 83, and so on. And then in 2003, the Shaws purchased the property, and Mr. Shaw can attest to the fact that they've maintained it and rented it out as a two-family.
What years were there gaps?
So,
1959, 60, and 61 look like an issue.
I think 59. But then 60, there's two. So it's 59, then 61.
Oh, right. Okay, I'm sorry, yeah.
I mean, towards the end.
And then again towards the end, right. So, you know, one of the things that I would suggest, I've mentioned this before when we've looked at these records, that they're sort of one of our, you know, best available evidence that we have, but they're not conclusive. Generally speaking, the more transient tenants, they don't fill out the census forms, and especially when you get into the modern era, it's voluntary completion and submission of the census forms. So for older records that are based on the poll tax, they're usually at least accurate to a degree, but when we get into the modern era, the accuracy drops down considerably. So if you look at all that, though, if you look at the sort of, you put it all together, notwithstanding the gaps, you see a pattern, an overall pattern, that combined with the assessor's records, combined with the electrical permit, granting the two separate electrical meters, paints the picture of a two-family use consistent since 1958 when it was rendered nonconforming. So with that, we feel that it's a lawful pre-existing nonconforming and therefore would like to demolish it and reconstruct. Now, you have plans that were submitted with...
Why don't we stop for a moment and ask, there seems to be quite an audience here. Is there anyone here that wants to contest that this is a two-family house?
I don't think we want to contest that it's a two-family. We live exactly across the street. We live in a similar situation.
Okay.
We're going to go on and talk about
what they're going to build.
Yes.
But the first issue they have to cross is to establish that it's been a two-family house since 1958.
It became a two-family. It was my grandmother's house.
Ah. Yeah. Okay, do you want to?
So it was a single-family house at one time, farmland. That's what it was. And.
You want to have a testimony?
Yeah, could I ask you to come up and use the microphone again?
Because things are being taped.
They're being taped.
Save it for the microphone so we can watch it on TV.
Okay.
This is as good as Hollywood here.
Yeah. All right, so tell us your name.
My name is June McGeever.
Ah, okay, welcome.
McGeever.
Okay.
And my grandparents.
Own this house?
Own the house. I live on Bridge Street.
I see a bunch of McGeevers back in the 50s.
Right. Francis was my father.
Right, okay.
And George was my uncle.
Right.
And they had purchased the land after my grandparents died. And my aunt, I don't know if Mary McGeever is on the list at one time, or an O'Leary on the list.
There's O'Leary.
George O'Leary.
George Leary.
Okay, Larry. He owned the property. And they bought it from him when the grandparents. He was the brother of my grandmother.
Okay. And, and it looks like Mr. Leary was there in 57, but not after.
Right.
So it sounds like it was probably just about 58.
Just about then
they bought it.
Everybody had passed on, the grandparents, and so he had moved to New York with my aunt, who also lived there, which was a Mary McGeever. Who's not on the list.
So when they bought it in 58, was it a two-family?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't.
What was it?
It was just a single home, just a single farmhouse.
When did they make it into a two-family?
I can't tell you the year, but it was after that. It's the Fontecchios bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I see the Fontecchio.
Around 61.
Right, around 61, right. And then at that time, around 61, an addition was put on to it to make it a two-family.
And who were the Brooks family, any idea?
Have no idea.
But so in 57, the census shows Frank McGeever, William McGeever, and George Leary living at the house. And that would imply that there were two families. But you're saying you know of personal knowledge that it was a single family.
Yeah, I don't know because in 57.
Was George Leary related to Frank McGeever?
You said Mr. Leary was the owner.
Mr. Leary was the owner, right. And then in 61, Francis and William bought the house. Around 61, maybe.
Well, for a whole bunch of years 60? In the 50s, the street list shows Mr. Leary living there as well as Frank and William McGeever.
Yeah, William McGeever was there, right, until he passed on.
Mr. Leary, and doesn't that imply, since they weren't related, doesn't that imply it was a two-family house?
It wasn't a two, that they were all brothers, except for Larry. McGeever. Larry was the owner, he was the uncle of Francis and William.
So they were all related.
It was the grandmother's sister, brother. That's what she said earlier.
Uncle and the two nephews.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Let's go on. I think it means you're going to probably have to do a little more work.
All right. One thing I will mention, and we did have this come up once before. I think it was the three family on Webster. The whole concept is just because there are relations. Or there's a relatives or family connection, doesn't necessarily mean that it avoids the status. It's you can have family members living in the house.
I agree. But what this lady said was is that there was an addition built in 61 that then converted it to a...
It could have been a year earlier than that, when the Fontecchios bought it.
Yeah, they expanded it.
Around 61, I would think.
George, is there a building permit around that time that would show the addition?
There was a building permit for 2 bedrooms, so that could have been for the addition, and it was, I think that was 63 maybe, or 62, it was around that time.
Now, if that's true, that it was converted to a two-family after the
58,
change of the 58 zoning code.
They got a problem.
That would seem to be a fatal issue.
That would be an issue, yes.
Do you know when the Fontecchios bought?
Off the top of my head, I do not.
Okay.
But it was, my recollection is that it was right around 60, I think, 61. Was right
according
around
to this,
61.
61. But that doesn't mean they weren't living there earlier or something to that effect. So I think you want to find out when they closed and purchased the property. Looks like it's 61, because you had the Brooks family in there for 2 years.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's go on and discuss what you want to build, and let's hear what people have to say about that.
All right. So so the proposal is to knock down the existing house completely, redo the entire lot, and put up a new two-family with 2 units that would basically be up and down units side by side. And the new two-family would be located more towards the center of the lot, so that would get rid of the current setback violation. And let's see if I can. So I see set over there, and all right. So I see the neighbors have a set. So. So basically, it's 2 identical units. One's pushed back a little bit to break up the sort of building lines. And it's basically 2 floors or 2.5 floors of living space with the garage and utilities underneath on the basement level or lower level. It's positioned in a way to sort of take advantage of the topography on the site. If any of the board members were out there, you'd notice that on the Ledge Street side, it's lower, and then it goes up quite a bit, sort of up towards the back. So this is essentially built into that so that the garages would be on the front on that Ledge Street side, and then the sort of residential living space would be above that and then on the grade of the back. The 2 units have each one has a bay window in the front. That's a 2-story bay window to provide some architectural detail. And, you know, basically it's pretty straightforward units. Consistent with a lot of the units that have been before the board in the last few years and have been built in throughout the town in different areas. One thing to note is that this is proposed to be modular construction as opposed to standard stick frame construction. But obviously from the outside, it's going to look just like any other house, any other stick frame house. The modular components don't look any different.
I just presume that means it goes faster.
It does, right. Basically, you have a foundation and decking one day, and then the next day, well, next couple of days, basically, boom, 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 all of a sudden, it's there. So in a sense, it's the impact to the neighborhood is a lot less usually with the modular construction because it's a little more intensive for the couple of days that the modular units are coming in, but then they're only there, you know, only takes a little bit for them to go in, and then all the rest of the work is all on the inside. So you don't have that few months of framing and framing and framing and roofing and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot quicker and less intensive with respect to impact on the neighborhood from that perspective.
How do these things get delivered here?
They
they
come down in, well, actually we have the representative here that can probably answer that better, but you've probably seen them on the highway. You see these big, like...
I know how they put them on trucks and drive them. I'm asking how are they getting to this particular property, given that you're on some relatively small street?
Come up the street very carefully. Come up the street very carefully, and then the crane lifts them up and puts them in.
It's coming up Reservoir.
Yes. That's the only way to get there.
Reservoir's the old 128. It's wide.
Yeah.
It's like 3 car lengths.
Yeah, no, I know. I just was curious what the thought was. Yeah.
George, it looks like the square footage on the two units is 1950 per unit. That's 3,900 square feet?
That's about right, yep.
And what is it existing today?
So currently it is 2,086 plus another, well, it's not entirely clear, but it's between 2,086 and about 3,200.
How many bedrooms?
Currently or proposed?
Currently.
Currently is five bedrooms. Five bedrooms, two baths.
In each unit?
No, current, the current house has five total bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, why don't we let them do the presentation and then people can come and use the microphone.
All right, so the current house has a total of five bedrooms. That's between the two units plus two full baths. And the new, the replacement two-family has got three bedrooms.
Each.
Per unit, right.
Per unit.
Right, so it goes from a total of five to six.
Six.
So it's only an increase.
And what is the split? Just I'm interested in that. In the current...
The current one, I think it's...
Three and two?
With the current units?
Three-bedroom one, yes.
Two on the top?
No, three on the top and two on the bottom.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. This plan says four bedrooms for each unit?
Can we just wait?
Just wait and then you'll be able to ask questions.
I'm sorry. You're right. I missed the bedroom. Four bedrooms. Total of eight. Increase of three. There's a master bedroom and then three smaller bedrooms for each unit.
Why don't you address how this fits under the zoning provision?
Sure. So the house itself meets all the setback and lot coverage requirements of section 1.4.7.4. It also meets the new requirements that were just recently adopted by town meeting, including the new height requirement, the 25-foot setback for garage, as well as floor area ratio requirement. So the proposal meets all dimensional and density requirements.
And it meets the 18% lot
coverage. Meets the 18% lot coverage. It meets the...
Because that was a little confusing on the plan and your presentation. You were talking about 25%, but I think you're clearly under 1.4.7.4, which governs reconstruction of two families.
Right.
So you need to be under 2,518%, and you are.
Right.
This plan is pretty good. That
well, except the plan says that the lot coverage is 25%, and that's wrong. It's 18%.
Well, what I actually have them do is I have them do both, because technically we're supposed to comply with both requirements. It just happens to be that 1.4.7.4 is more restrictive.
Right.
So by complying with that, we do automatically comply with the other one.
Right.
But technically, the other one still applies. It's just.
Right. So under 1.4.7.4, if you've met the stated requirements in terms of size, we have to find that this is appropriate in mass and scale for the neighborhood and not substantially more detrimental to the neighborhood than the existing house. So
right.
Why don't you address those criteria?
Right. So basically we have a footprint of about 1,900 square feet. And an overall mass and size that is consistent with and even smaller than many single families that would typically be built. So in this, the lot is slightly oversized, not tremendously oversized, just slightly oversized. So with that, we think that the structure is compatible with the lot. We also think, given some of the recent houses that have been built in the area, especially up on Bridge Street, that it fits in with the neighborhood. In particular, up on Bridge Street, there are a couple of new single families that have been built that are in the larger sort of size category. So it's in keeping with the shifting trend. There are other houses in the area that are a bit smaller, some of the older houses, but presumably as time goes by and they'll get redone, larger houses will replace them. So we feel that that is compatible with the neighborhood and fits in with the site, especially given the grading on the site and the topography.
Okay. Eventually here I'm going to kind of ask the public to ask their questions, but let me run through a few other things that we have in the record. You met with the town engineer to go over the drainage plan, and the town engineer has given us a letter that the revised plan is acceptable to the DPW, and I take it the revised plan is the one we're looking at here today?
Actually, the revised plan is a drainage plan, which it's the same plan with drainage structures added to it.
Okay.
So basically, if I just to give an explanation, under the requirements, you have to infiltrate rainwater into the ground, and so there are four what we call Cultec systems to take the rainwater off the roof and put that into the ground to recharge the ground.
All right. So since we don't have that plan in front of us, if we were to approve this, we probably ought to say it's subject to a plan that's been approved by the town engineer. Okay, so next, the police department said that their only safety concern would be if there was parking on Bridge or Ledge Street. All parking needs to stay on the property. You want to address that? Is there going to be room on the property to park?
So each unit actually has a two-car tandem garage. Unfortunately, the bylaw, as the board is well aware, doesn't allow for side-by-side spaces for these two-family reconstructions, but it does allow for tandem. So we're providing two garage space for each unit in a tandem configuration. In addition, there's ample driveway space outside the building for parking of vehicles as well.
So
plenty of room for vehicles.
So it's more than, I think you said it's more than 25 feet from the street, the
yes.
driveways?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Fire has reviewed it, and they have no concerns. The building inspector says that has reviewed it, and his letter says that he's satisfied you meet the dimensional requirements of 1.4, 7.4. However, he was concerned that about the height and that whether you'll meet the 2.5 story limitation.
The height, field resources looked at the height and specifically calculated it up to make sure that we meet the new height requirement.
Yeah,
and
which
we
is
do,
what I think
it's,
41.
It's actually on the plan, it's 30.
Yeah.
31.04, and it can't be higher than 32.
And what about the stories?
So, and with respect to the stories, because of the way the lot is configured, the way it's graded, it'll meet the story requirement as well.
Let me just look. We don't have two basements. So. Just been the problem somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the elevation, the front elevation, I think that's what raises the concern. So does the bottom floor will end up not being a story because they'll be underground in the back?
Yes. Basically, all the sides and all the back, it's all underground.
All right. So I think the rule is that 50% of it, if more than 50% is underground, then it's considered a basement and not a story.
That's right.
Anyhow, the building inspector will hold you to that one. The planning board had no comment, and the health department said the owner needs to complete a notification of demolition and submit it to the health department, which I'm sure you probably know.
That's standard operating procedure.
So is there anything more you want to say before we open up?
No, that's it.
Okay, so who would like to speak, please? If you have questions or comments, you know, please come up and use the microphone.
You go right ahead. I mean, I can talk too. I don't care. Why don't you guys raise your concerns
I know. I mean, you all got a turn. Hi, tell us your name.
I'm Julie Ledoux. I live at 82 Reservoir Street. We've been there for about 4 years. One comment I just wanted to make is we love our neighborhood. It's a little old neighborhood. Yes, there are some larger homes on Bridge Street that are beautiful and kind of bringing the neighborhood property values up. Lovely people live there, but they are single family homes, and there is a difference in people's mindsets and my mindset of a single family versus a two family or more. These plans look beautiful, looks like a really nice house. I'm sure the kitchens will be beautiful, but it just concerns me that we'll be bringing tenants, which are not common on our street, versus owners, and, you know, having a two-family versus our typical single-family home on our street and the surrounding streets.
Well, of course, there are tenants there now.
Yes, and we are not unhappy that they are not going to be there. We've had, as we all know, some issues with those particular tenants. But who's to say that just because these new tenants might have additional funding to buy or to rent these nicer homes, they're going to be any better. I'm not saying they could be worse than owners. You know, you never know what you're going to get from a neighbor. But we've all been living in this neighborhood for quite a few years, and a lot of people have been living there for like 50 to 60 years. And I think that you get to know these people, and you don't want people moving in and out.
Well, unfortunately, none of us get to control that.
Of course. Just a concern of mine.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Hi. Oh, welcome.
Hello.
Hi. And you are?
I'm Emily Bellish, and that's my wife, Jasmine, and we own the home at 109 Reservoir, directly across the street from the proposed property. As my neighbor Julie echoed, there's been consistent issues with not only the physical state of the property, but also the tenants who've lived there. While we're excited at the idea of a demolition and rebuild, because we look at the property, we directly face it, proposed plans don't reflect the fact that while that bottom story is underground and meets the requirement, it's a three-story home for us. It's what we're looking at. It completely changes the scope of the neighborhood. The house directly to the right of it is a tiny two-story, like you see the garage, and then there's like one floor where the family's been living there forever. And then Liz's house is right next to that. So that kind of like facade, that row of houses, it does not match with the houses that are in that space. Like Julie mentioned, yes, there are homes that I agree on Bridge Street that are quite large. Again, only single family homes. When we bought our home, it was being illegally used as a two family, and the city made it very clear that we had to eliminate that usage. I think that when we called the commissioner's office, they made it clear that you have to do one of two things. Either prove that you can be grandfathered in, which I think we are unclear about because the usage is not clear, or second, operate within the original footprint. I'm not clear that this is operating with the original footprint of the existing house.
That's not accurate. There is a special bylaw provision.
Right.
And if they built on the same footprint, they wouldn't have to come here at all.
Okay.
They could just go to the building department.
I think that's our concern, is that it's moving outside of that footprint.
Yeah, but there are criteria set forth that they have to meet. They have to be under certain, they have to obtain a special permit to build outside the existing footprint. They have to meet certain dimensional requirements, which they do in terms of the footprint and the lot coverage of the house, and then we have to find that it's appropriate in mass and scale for the neighborhood.
That's the only part that I can comment on, and it's not. So our feeling, you know, as the people
you'd rather have the existing house stay.
I would not rather have the existing house stay, but something that even that house doesn't really fit in with the neighborhood.
No, but you see, I know everyone would like it to somehow get converted to a single family house, but it doesn't. I mean, the only choices that are really in front of us now is to allow this new house, which is going to be a lot more expensive and a lot more valuable, or to deny it, and then the old house stays there.
So if I had to rank my preferences, it's like my road. Well, then for me, I think personally, as the person who faces this house, the potential value add of having a home like this in the neighborhood is not worth what it detracts from the current climate in our neighborhood and the people who live there for generations and generations, because it is consistently, outside this one house, a single-family neighborhood. Our house was the only other outlier, and when we purchased it, we were forced to remove the illegal use. So that is my feeling.
Okay, thank you.
Hi.
Well, welcome.
Hi. I'm May Patton. I live at 16 Ledge Street, right up the street from the proposed change of building. My question is, I know you're saying this building sits 25 feet away from the road and that there'll be ample parking.
The new one does.
The new one. 15, correct. But my concern is the same as the police department's concern with parking. Right now, we already have a problem with parking in the existing structure. It's pretty far back from the street. There are, when the tenants, the upstairs, or the tenants we were having problems with left, we still had problems with parking. There are often 6 cars in the lot, and they're on Ledge Street. It's already, as you can see from all the streets that come together, a pretty awkward and, I would argue, not safe intersection. There, I think, are 5 roads coming together right there. So we're often, I would say once a month, we are having problems with people coming down Bridge Street, and we don't have great visibility anyway. And when there are cars there, it creates some near misses because we don't have a good view of the street. So we are concerned about the current plan. I saw it with the tandem parking. I think it's not realistic to expect that a family is going to use that tandem parking like that, and both of their cars are going to be in there. Half of it's going to be filled with bikes, most likely, and the other car is going to be out, and then there's going to be not a lot of space for guests, or if they've got a kid with a third car.
There's a 25-foot driveway. You could park 3 cars.
There's a much bigger driveway now, and we're already having problems with the cars. So, and with the what's being created as a safety issue there. I mean, the police referenced it for a reason. We've called them because we've had problems with that intersection already. So that's my primary concern.
Okay.
Thank you. So let me ask a question. So that you feel that, because currently it's existing too with a lot of cars and some tenants that are apparently a little bit difficult. That's what's there today. And so how do you feel that this proposal would make it worse?
I think it's going to eat up some of the parking spaces in the front. So already with all of the space that's out front for them to utilize for parking, even after the second family left, we were still having problems with the number of cars parked there. They wouldn't all fit on the lot as it stands. And we're now going to be taking some of that space away, and the potential for more cars to be on the street, to me, is pretty significant, because I really, it's great that there's going to be this nice tandem garage, but I highly doubt it'll get used for 2 cars most of the time.
I personally agree with you.
But so these garages are indoors, right?
That's correct.
Currently, there is no indoor garage?
No garage at all, right.
None at all.
So that you're creating 4 underground garage spaces, correct?
4, right.
Where there's none now.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, we were speculating whether the user, prospective buyers or tenants use it for storage or parking, but at least they're generating a positive. They're creating 4 more spaces that weren't there before.
Yeah, I think that when I look at that, there's 2 tandem spots. There looks like on the plan that there might be room for another car to be parked off to the side, so those 2 cars can reverse out of that garage. But, I mean, if you just look at the logistics of that and think about how that's going to get used, no one can really park in front of the garage so the other 2 can get out. It's going to be a pileup of cars, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Good.
I'm Shannon Martin. I live at 50 Bridge Street, so much like my neighbors here, I abut the property. I thought it was appropriate to step in now because I had some questions about the parking as well. Currently, the 2-family, 1 driveway is off of Bridge Street and 1 driveway is off of Ledge Street. My question was going to be just to clarify. The thought is that Bridge Street driveway is going to be eliminated, and the Ledge Street driveway, if you will potentially be reconstructed, if you will, to lead down to these underground garages?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Presumably, they're going to be 2 driveways.
Perfect. Okay. Both coming off of Ledge Street.
Or
it's actually one.
One that runs.
That opens up.
Okay. So one driveway opens up to allow for the access to the four garages, if you will, or the two garage, the garage for each unit. Okay. And just to express, to support the concern, I think some of the concern about the two-family, quite honestly, is there hasn't been a lot of control in the most recent years about the amount of people going in and out of these properties. What I mean by that is people that don't really live there, live there. So I think that's why you see the pileup of the cars on Ledge Street. It's interesting because in recent months, the number of cars on the bottom level, which is still occupied, has really increased. And there are cars parking on Ledge Street. And there's, I would say at any time, there's probably about six vehicles maybe in that driveway. And it's clear that those vehicles have not been present throughout the tenure of those residents living there. So as a personal opinion, I really have no problem. It's of a two-family. It's been a two-family since I've lived at 50 Bridge Street, and it really hasn't been an issue. But I appreciate what my neighbors are saying here, and I think the concern with the cars is there really is no control of the tenants that live there are opening their home to other people. And that's not to pass any sort of judgment or prediction on the tenants that might be coming in the future, because it very well could be a different situation.
They also could be condos and sold to single families.
Oh.
So that's a possibility too. So
yep.
The price of the new construction may be a sale rather than rental. That's always a possibility.
Okay, perfect. That's a good clarification.
No one can. But
sure.
Frankly, we do see a pattern when you have old rundown houses.
Yeah.
They tend to get rented to a bunch of college kids or
exactly.
single people and not family types.
Sure.
You know, after someone spends, you know, $1.5 million to or whatever it is to
sure.
build a new house.
It's going to be a different.
It really does yeah. tend to upgrade.
For a purchaser in a family.
Yeah.
Well, the people, whether it's tenants or purchaser, but we don't know.
Understandable. Yeah. And
But it does tend to upgrade the kind of people that are there when you upgrade the house.
Agreed. And I think I know, I speak for myself, that I certainly welcome that. I certainly welcome the change and the. I appreciate the effort to take some sort of action with this property and make it a better place to live for some folks to come in, because it is a great neighborhood. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, one other thing I want to say is I think our bylaw limits dwelling units to being occupied by three unrelated people.
And I wish the actual police department would have enforced that, because if we would have enforced that on that man, we would not all be here so angry today. So I'm just going to say that. So as much as you say that, I think that's a number of
people. Why don't you wait and come to the microphone?
Which is fine.
Please come to the microphone to say what you want to say.
So let me ask you, thank you very much for your comments.
Absolutely,
so you're in a single family home?
I am, yes.
How many cars at your lot?
There's two. There's two cars. My aunts who are present here today live at 42 Bridge Street, so we actually share a driveway. So in the interest of, I guess, full disclosure, for 50 Bridge Street, there's two vehicles. For 42 Bridge Street, there's two vehicles. We have a shared driveway. My aunts park to the left. Myself and my father park to the right. We actually took some of our land and made it a little bit of a driveway to get that extra space in there.
Are you moved by the size, the height of this structure from the street level?
I am, and I appreciate you asking that question. In all due fairness, I appreciate that plans do not always reflect the reality of what the structure may look like. So one of my concerns, much like my neighbor here, is, okay, what sort of sunlight or obstruction is it? What we would be having. I know that was an issue in Needham regarding some of these bigger homes going up and some of the smaller, older homes having some trouble getting the sunlight. So that was a concern that I had in regards to a potential rebuild. I presumed that the rebuild would be a property that would be a little bit more on the upper scale, if you will. Please excuse the judgment there. But it is concerning to see that height. Again, I appreciate that what is actually going to be built, that may not reflect what I'm thinking in my mind. So
Am I mistaken that if the owner does a single-family huge home, it's going to be the same?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And again, I really have personally no really concern with the two-family versus the one. It's like, again, as long as I've been there, it's been two-family. I haven't really seen much of an issue, but I will say I'm on the other side, so I'm not as much affected by the parking situation as some of my neighbors here on Ledge Street are. Just to the point about the homes, I live on the side of Bridge Street that's a little bit smaller. Bridge Street is a dead-end street, so some of the bigger homes, they really start subsequent to my aunt's home at 42 Bridge Street down to the dead-end street. For whatever that's worth, I just point that out. So the size is a bit concerning, but...
But you're saying that they're not in the middle of the neighborhood.
That's right. The bigger houses on Bridge Street,
not
just to
reservoir.
Exactly. Right. Just to address that point, the bigger homes on Bridge Street are towards the end of the street.
Today, that's the problem we all
face. Exactly. Yeah. And again, I welcome a change to that property at Reservoir Street, and it would really be wonderful, I think, to have a cleanup, if you will, in all sense of the word there.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for allowing me to speak. Appreciate your time.
You gotta come talk.
How are you? George, how are you? I haven't seen you in a long time. Ms. Tamkin, how are you?
Ms. Goldman, how are you?
I am Liz Moore. I live at 120 Reservoir Street, and I've lived there since 92, I think. I was there when the Fontecchios were there. Lydia lives across the street. She is still there, Fontecchio. So if we need any details with that, you can go over and have coffee, because I'm sure George would love to chat with her. Anyway, so our neighborhood has been impacted and stressed over the past 10 years by two people who do not live in our neighborhood. And I understand that we're all for the whole neighborhood to change and be cleaned up. And we've been battling to have that happen. So my stress with all of this is that someone who does not live in this town, does not live in our neighborhood, and wants to financially benefit from renovating in this neighborhood, I want to make sure that he wants to make sure, and the builder, and the other person that we're dealing with, that they actually are being considerate of us that are living there. So the stress we have that in general, and I worded this to him before, and as politely as I can, is I don't think he was a very responsible property owner in regards to his tenants that were there. And we, as a neighborhood, and especially some of the people, had to deal with some very, very scary situations. And the traffic is not my concern as much as his being not a very good property owner in regards to how he managed that property. So that's right, I can't control what he does, whether he rents that or whether he sells them. But personally, if he sold them, I would be doing a happy dance, because I would not be happy for him to be a property owner in my neighborhood, because that's how poorly he managed that. And he's impacting my neighborhood, and he doesn't live there. And I met him 3 weeks ago. So if you think I'm happy with that, and I said this to him, and I know that he's going to renovate, and I'm for that, I could care less about the two family. I could care less if it's a single family. I honestly don't have that stress. I am stressed to be looking at a giant three-story building. Do I think that the two cars in the driveway part is gonna be an issue? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to be a stress for people to drive there? Absolutely. I don't know how to solve any of those problems. These are my concerns. This has been a nightmare for us for years. Like, absolute nightmare. I can't even word the amount of stress that we've been dealing with the transients that have lived in that neighborhood, the drug dealers that cut through our yard, the sex offenders that were living there, a nightmare. I have young children, and I've had to deal with this with the police multiple times. We've had drug raids, ridiculous. So if
People think that we're okay. We're not. You can't fix that. You can't. You can't go back. You can't say sorry. There's nothing. Nobody lives there. We do. This man is profiting and has profited from this house, and I've never met him. So I personally am flustered. We've called the police. We've dealt with the town. Now, to me, I get it. You're a great board of people, but you don't live in my neighborhood. So the stress of someone having to pull out or their kids riding bikes and to have 18-wheelers that drive down or a school bus that tries to drive down our little tiny street to bang a U-ey and you got six cars all parked in the corner, it's a little bit of a nightmare. Never mind the garage, which has nothing to do with him, but I'm just saying, it's impacted by the drama, and I need the drama to go away, and that's fine. If he wants to sell those, I'm all for it. I'm all for the neighborhood to change and be improved, because looking at the eyesore is a nightmare. But am I concerned if he puts a two-family and he's going to rent it? I am absolutely concerned. I can't solve that. There's nothing I can control, as the police will tell you. But for us, those are our concerns. Do I want to look at this giant 30-foot building with two-car garage that, in all reality, you know, people are going to be pulling out of there trying to get around, and that's the truth. I'm sure that these are going to be invested and there's going to be money and maybe he sells them and now we've got, you know, responsible homeowners or responsible tenants. Yeah, that's all great. That has not been the pattern. So you can't solve that for me. I'm just voicing what has happened. So this is the stress that everybody's here and we're trying to be very nice. We're all working hard. We have a group text. We all chat, we all talk about stuff. Everybody, it's a nice, small neighborhood of single family homes. I could care less, really, of the two townhouses. It doesn't mind. If they sell them, I'd be thrilled. We get nice new neighbors, more kids, I'd be happy.
Okay.
You know, but I don't know how you solve that.
Well, I mean, I get it that there's been an unattentive and, you know, maybe bad landlord running this, but I think...
Which we can't control.
I think the judgment you have to make is it likely to get better after he spends $800,000 fixing this place up,
right?
Because the alternative is if this is turned down,
which
it's going to stay just what it is now.
And I said that. I said, are we shooting ourselves in the foot to even show up here today? Because should I just let it fly through? Because... You know, what if we prevent it? Because then he's going to be like, I don't care, and just put back the crazy people that we've been dealing with. So, you know what I mean? We are stuck.
So you're kind of receptive, though. I think that part of the process, these public hearings, is for everyone to listen to each other and try to deal with some of the concerns. But you seem like something new, fresh with new owners, especially a family, should be delighted with.
Which I think we'd be thrilled.
But we can't control that. We can't condition the sale.
We can't control any of that. We can't say you mandatorily have to sell. We can't control that. Now, being in construction, the only points that I am just going to raise here and I'm not familiar with is the prefabs. Is that going to, again, construction-wise, is that going to be something that looks great and pretty and shiny for like 3 weeks, and then 2 years from now, it's all bad. I don't know
I moved into a prefab house in 1950.
Again, yeah.
It looked like a regular house once it was built.
So I guess, is that a concern? I don't know. The parking is a major concern. That is, I will say, because basically the way, if you're not familiar with the neighborhood,
I was there today, and it is a crazy intersection
of cars that are everywhere. You know, like we had landscapers at our
house.
The
only good thing is you don't have people passing through to go anywhere, because everything's a dead end.
Hopefully, they're still trying to get to 128.
I wish the police knew that when they were doing the construction, because they sent everyone from Central Ave up our street. And when I called the police to actually say that, they thought I was crazy. So
actually, a lot of people come down around.
I think the GPS takes them down there. Anyway, there's a lot of concerns. But that, I have to say, is why you're getting a lot of a lot of flack. It's been a big stress for a long time. So this is not something I'm not telling you that I haven't told him to his face. So I'm fine with that, and I understand that. And I'm all for the improvement, which I'm for. So I guess my concern is I want responsible building. I want, you know, responsible, that you're going to be responsible, meaning like that you're making an educated and informed decision. And from that point, we can't control anything else. But I guess I am concerned that the two family across the street was denied. So I guess we had this conversation earlier that if you're going to allow two families on here, and then how come the other woman could not do two family on hers? So I guess I feel like
we haven't decided anything yet.
Yeah, I guess I just feel like...
And I don't know, we heard that. I don't know anything that came before us.
Well, that was in a sale. I don't know the classifications of that, but I guess I feel like if this is going to be allowed, then maybe some of the other ones should be allowed, because if he can profit from it, then...
This one is only allowed if they can prove that it's been continuously a two-family house since 1958.
Because so that's the only... I guess I just don't understand the bylaw.
Because in 1958... the zoning was changed from allowing two families to allowing only single families. But if you exist, you're allowed to continue forever if you exist when there's a zoning change.
Can you clarify? So say you deny it. His house already exists as a two family. It exists until it falls down. Like, if he tears it down, he can only put up a single family if you prove that it wasn't one.
I don't know the answer to that, because he could go to the building inspector and try to build on the same footprint, and the building inspector would render a decision whether he thinks it's a legal two-family.
Okay. So then what I guess is...
But it's zoned as a one-family.
But if it was a two-family in 1958 when the zoning was changed, it's allowed to continue forever.
It's pre-existing.
It's a two-family.
It's grandfathered.
You have to come up and use the microphone. Right? Yeah.
So I guess my last question for you is that this purpose of this meeting is purposely for what? Like, what is it that you're hearing our thing, but what is the purpose? What is this really for?
In order to build outside the footprint, they need a special permit from this board. And the test on whether we'll give that special permit is the proposed house appropriate in mass and scale for the neighborhood, and will it be more detrimental to the neighborhood than what's there? The second test, you know, I think you've said it, that's how I feel, putting a new house up to replace an old rundown place is generally helpful to everyone's property values.
Right.
But we spend a lot of time on these, hearing from neighbors whether they think it's appropriate in mass and scale for the neighborhood. And moreover, they can't do it at all unless they convince us and prove that it's been a two-family house since before 1958.
So the burden of proof for that part, meaning like this is not to decide a two-family.
No.
This is just to decide if the actual footprint of the house is? No. Just so I understand, I'm not
trying to... We don't get to any of that unless he can prove that it was a two-family before the change of zoning in 1958.
And it's been continuously
used.
If he can prove that, then we proceed to the next step. Is this appropriate in mass and scale for the neighborhood?
Oh, okay. So there's multiple steps to this.
So there's a concern if we don't approve this, because he hasn't approved the burden of proof on this one, then it's denied and it stays as is, or he builds a single family home of the same size, or he gets the building inspector to agree he can stay within the same footprint.
But then it would be the same size as the existing house, and it wouldn't be the three-story.
No,
it can go up.
As long as it's on the footprint, it can go up 35 feet.
35. When you say it would stay as is, would it be allowed to be a two-family?
That's up to the building inspector.
If it stays within the footprint.
I'm sorry, say
if it stays within the footprint. Right now, they're moving.
No, she's asking, can they continue to run it as a two-family house?
If
they don't convince
us. Change anything.
It's up to the building inspector.
Okay.
You know, and And, you know, and it may be just unclear. They may not be able to carry their burden of proof here, but it may be unclear. But we're going to continue this hearing in any event.
And I do have a question.
For them to come back with more evidence of, about those years. And secondly, I would say I would hope that they'd engage in some conversations with you. First of all, I could do something to change the design of the house that might make the neighborhood more happy. It sounds, what I heard here too, is maybe he'll make a commitment that he's going to sell these and not keep it as an investment property. And that would make it, we can't impose that on him, but you know, if he did that, it would probably buy your support. So I don't know what his plans are, and we can't impose it on him, but we are going to continue the hearing to give you all a chance to talk and for them to come back with more evidence that this was a two-family house.
Okay, so really, I guess if I, just to revert back to my English, so today, this is just to find out if it's a two-family. From the two-family, once that's approved, then it's the actual structure itself, and then that gets approved, and then it goes on. So that's kind of this the process, right. Just so I know. Just
those are the steps,
I know.
Yes.
Yep, that's the step. I know.
If everybody came in here and loved the project, and loved the design, and loved the height, and loved the everything about it, we probably don't go too far beyond that. But since the neighborhood is not so in love, I think the takeaway is to meet with the developer and George, focus on the aesthetics and what he's planning to do there, and see if there's a consensus that can be made between the developer and the neighborhood on what is going there. And if you can't reach a consent, if you can, you come back to the next meeting and you tell us. Yeah. If you can't, you tell us.
Yeah, I guess in the
and
whole...
And then we have to make our decision.
Right, which is fine. And everybody, I think, in general, is for an improvement. They're all for an improvement. It's just really how, you know, that giant, if it's going to look like this, giant. Because the way the street is, it goes up like this. So if it looks...
The projects that generally get approved a lot easier and aren't rejected are when there's dialogue between the community and the developer.
Yeah.
And so we strongly encourage that.
Yeah.
I think we're very well.
Yeah.
But by the way, you know, George, I refer you to, you know, the ruling that we made on Warren Street. Excuse me, yeah, but I guess that wasn't a 1.4, 7.4 there. We really are stuck with the one garage, unless you make a detached garage to get more garage.
Right.
And there's not room to do that.
It eats up more of the lot.
Yeah.
It eats up more of the lot, and it just makes it more massive looking of the lot.
Obviously, we're going to be looking at
have a dialogue because, you know, if there were two more garage spaces, that might make people feel more comfortable. I don't know.
So I want to ask a question. So there seems to be some concern about rental property. Has the developer thought about creating condominiums, establishing this as a condominium?
So there's been some thought about doing them as condos for sale, and there's been some thought about doing them as rentals. So there's not a definitive plan right now.
Right, but in light of what we're hearing tonight, this seems we'll to be a strong consensus for the ownership, so forming condos.
Which can be rented.
It would be, but it'd be pretty expensive to rent those out, perhaps. But maybe that through the process here of listening back and forth, that you'd be willing to create condos for sale, and that be, you know, a voluntary condition.
We'll certainly go back and sort of internally have discussions, and then engage with the neighborhood and speak with them. And I think
assuming you get over the lawful pre-existing establishment.
It'll probably be easier if the neighbors are happy.
I've already met with Liz.
Well, please, if you're going to talk, you got to come up and use the microphone.
You can talk.
Yeah, you should say a few words about the type of construction. I think people are asking about that.
I'll let you go.
So this
is
the builder. Thank you as well for coming.
I want to talk. George, your people want to talk. I'm sorry, and you are?
I'm Jeff Ricklin. I'm the builder. I'm on the Historic Commission across the river in Newton. We're happy to meet with the neighbors. I mean, I've met with Liz knows.
We've talked,
and I've said before, I'm happy to meet with any neighbor anytime to talk to them about it and discuss options.
Well, I mean, I think you need to organize something.
So that's going to get there. Let me ask you a question about the construction. There's been some questions about the nature of this this construction. Can you just enlighten us a little bit about the process and the quality control?
So I built two modulars in Needham before, 50 Fay Lane, which you're welcome to go to, and then I'm blanking on the other one is the street right across the street from the library. That's a dead end, and I can't think of the name of the street. And we built two. 50 Fay Lane was probably 8-10 years ago, and 42 was probably about 8 years ago. The company uses Westchester Modular. I'm a contractor. I've been a contractor over 30 years. When I looked at doing modular, I interviewed every company from Pennsylvania to Maine, and I chose Westchester Modular because I was convinced that their quality control is superior, their materials are superior. It actually is an employee-owned company. So there's another component to that.
But talk about, does it look like a traditional house when it's done?
It does.
And what about the construction process?
And you know what? If you go to 50 Fay Lane and if you looked at 50 Fay and you didn't know it was a modular, you would not know it's a modular. The only way to tell the difference between a modular and a stick-built is where the boxes connect, the walls are about 9.5 inches thick instead of a standard 4.5 inches. And, you know, one of the things that I tell people about modular is they're constructed in a factory, but they're also put on trailers brought here, and they're subject to wind shear. So they have to sustain 50, 60 mile an hour wind shear, which is much, much more than a traditional stick-built house, actually. So I'm happy to put the quality of modular up against any stick-built. I'll answer any specific questions you have about that or anything.
Are the prices usually less?
The prices for modular absolutely are less expensive than stick-built.
For the builder, but not for the sale.
No, with the sale too, because the cost is less expensive to build, you can sell them for less money.
But why would he do that?
Why would you? Because you're more competitive, because you make yourself more competitive in the market. So if you, that's historically
what happened. I'm thinking property values. Like if it's going to cost less to buy it, then that property value is going to cost.
I mean, my own house here in Needham came with sections constructed in a factory. It wasn't technically modular. They actually kind of finished the inside. But, you know, once it's up, you can't tell the difference.
I guess my question for you is about the construction. So as Liz mentioned, we dealt with the Adeline project on the back of our street, which has really improved the quality of our neighborhood because they're putting up the sound barrier. Mm-hmm. However, we've been dealing with that for like 6 months. Or 3 years.
Three years.
That was like the whole time I've been there, right?
Yeah.
3 years. And it's just background noise now. The second piece is the traffic. We have the car dealership at the end where the car repairs at the end of the street.
Yeah.
We're constantly driving up and down. We've reported this to the police. The additional issue is now there's additional construction at the end of Reservoir Street. So depending on the timing of this, like at any given time, we have like trucks, car dealership, like we have like there's an auto parts store because the end of our street's still commercial. So we have people coming up and down the street, people who think that it's not a through street. So now if I have a modular truck, how long does it sit there? Can I get out of my house?
So the way it works is, we call boxes are delivered ahead of time. That house, that project would be set by the set crew in 1.5 to 2 days.
It's much faster.
So the trucks would be out in
gone.
2 days.
They come, they drop, they're gone. They're there for one day.
How long is the crane
there? Crane's there for 1.5 to 2 days. Because they have to lift it off the trailer set.
I've watched two in my neighborhood. It's pretty interesting. And I know they're modulars because I saw them put together.
I mean, I assume that a private builder is going to be a lot faster than the Department of Transit, but
from the day it's set, you can turn around and move in within 6 to 8 weeks. Done.
So it's much faster.
It comes 80% complete for the factory.
Okay.
And you can go, it's Westchester, modular.com. You go to the website, it shows you, you know, it shows you a whole layout of how they build them, and it shows a set in about 30 seconds.
So
Mr. Schneider, I have a question for you.
Well, let me first, I'll get back to you.
Any other questions?
But, George, I think your client...
Can I just speak?
No, please, come and... Everyone should get a turn, then we'll repeat.
No, okay.
We'll go back to the repeat.
The first name...
Sir, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is PK, my initial PK, last name is Shah, PK Shah. I'm the owner of this property. And like a few weeks ago, we had arranged a meeting with all the neighbors. And unfortunately, we could not meet everybody. But let me express my sincere apology, very sincere apology, for not neglecting the property. But one of the tenant, we knew that it was a problem tenant. And neighbor had called me that they informed me that a lot of drug activity. And I tried. It took me several iterations, legal iterations, to get the tenant out. I went to the police department. I begged them, please provide me some kind of evidences so I can evict the tenant. And we went through legal system. Almost it took me a long time. And it took me a lot of expenses to get the neighbor out. So don't think that we did not do my part. It took me almost nearly one year of effort to evict that a problem tenant. So we were aware of it. I wish I had some more proof from the police department that could have supported me to evict the tenant more quickly. But I just could not. We used all the legal system, and finally we were able to evict the tenant. So again, my sincere apology. I know you went through an incredible, stressful situation. And again, in the future, if I am the lucky owner of this property, I will make sure that I will give my phone number to everyone. Any problem, any issue, feel free to call me 24/7.
But then it would take a year to get that person evicted.
No, don't. I will do immediately my part.
It's not a piece of cake to be a landlord. If you've got a bad tenant, it's very hard.
Yeah, I believe you're a landlord.
Yeah, the statutes are very pro-tenant, and so it sounds like the gentleman is suggesting is that you need evidence from the police of drugs.
Well,
and that must have been difficult.
The police don't gather evidence.
Yeah, no, but so the point is, so I mean, I appreciate you making the apology and giving us a little background. That's
and
helpful.
I did go to police department 2-3 times because a couple of neighbors called me, and I was aware of all the problem they had, and believe me, I did my part as best as I can, and I did not, I used all the legal help. I went through the legal processes, and it took me a long time to evict that.
So there's one of the suggestions, perhaps, to get out of the rental business, if you would, commit or consider sort of a condo sale model. And that's something that, your counsel and yourself and the rest of you will talk offline. So, anyway, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity together.
Do you have a date for the next?
Okay. All right, thank you.
My things are up right here.
Thank you.
Hey, this young lady wants to speak.
I just have one quick question for you, and sure. Apologies for not doing my own research on this. You mentioned that obviously when you get rid of a not-so-nice house and you bring in a nicer home, property values go up. Absolutely agreed with that. What about two-family homes, though? I feel like in my experience of looking for homes, families, neighborhoods with two-family homes do often have lower property values than single family homes. Is that, I don't know if you know the answer to that, because it's going to be the only two family in the same neighborhood.
There are a lot of two families
in
Nita.
Yes.
In sprinkled around.
They're usually
in the older parts of town. Mm-hmm.
And many are new now.
Yeah, right. And there's been a constant stream in front of us of builders find those, knock them down, and build new ones that are bigger and
but they
much
were
more
originally
valuable.
Two families.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're saying this was originally.
I guess we're just considering the impact on neighbors that can't happen. That can't happen.
There are originally two families in neighborhoods where there are multiple two-family homes.
Not
that's what I've seen on, like, Hillside, and, like, they knocked down three big houses, built really nice two-family.
I mean, there are a couple on Warren Street. There's one on Webster Street across from there's one on Webster Street across from the high school that was just in front of us. And, you know, and it's all the rest around it are single houses. You know, and it does need to be fixed.
Yeah, that one needs to go.
You know, and there are a lot of places in town where there are sporadic two families, and if they're nice, I don't think it affects that.
If this is a two family, and he has the right to rebuild the two family, and it's newer and nicer,
it's going to bring
that.
It's better.
Is it going to be as good as a single family McMansion? You know, who knows? There's a lot of people don't like those.
Right. I'm my biggest, that's my concern. And then my other biggest concern, I think, as we've all talked about, and then I'll just totally be done, is that the big houses, and yes, this could change, they are on Bridge Street. They're not on Reservoir, which is where this home would be. And it is just going to be
but again,
huge change.
It could be right here. This house could be another big, big house. Single family. As of right.
As a rebuild.
Yeah.
Right, but I think for us...
I think I like the look of single families more than I like the look of this one.
A single family less offensive than two families moving into a giant two-family.
The nice projects that people seem to like are the two families that look like single families, however they're constructed.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible to have two sides and have entrances on different sides, which look nicer.
We want something that looks, you know, another problem with the two family.
Talk to
the, yeah, here we go. Yes,
style.
So are we thinking about a continuous?
So yes, we're definitely going to continue this.
I say we vote.
Yes, please.
Sorry,
I
was just thinking this before. I just want to state this because at the beginning you were mentioning, you know, we're kind of on Reservoir, but most our address is on Reservoir, most of our facing property is on Ledge Street, and then we're kind of on Bridge, and then you referenced the big street, the big houses on Bridge Street, but really it's on Ledge Street, my street, and we just renovated a one-family house, a small one-family house. We didn't build a McMansion there. We intend to stay there for a long time. Our neighbor just renovated her place, and it's not a McMansion, and it's going to stay that way for a long time. And then there's another small house on the corner. So it really isn't consistent with the properties on the street where the house actually looks like its addresses. So I want to
We are the 2-1, so we did a renovation that made an illegal two family a true one family that fits in with the neighborhood. And we did the same thing.
All right, George, anything you want to say to wrap up?
No, just look forward to speaking with the neighborhood and working through these issues.
All right, and our next hearing is
20th?
June.
July 20th, I think. No? You sent out the sheet. There was only one.
I think it's the third Thursday.
It will be July 20th.
Okay. I thought so.
Good work. All right, so you're continuing until July 20th.
Who needs
I have a photographic memory of the map, of the calendar.
I haven't seen it.
Anything else from anyone on the board?
Motion no.
To adjourn?
Yes. Yes.
Seven. What time do you want to continue it to?
7:30.
7:30 on the 20th.
So we're adjourned.